Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
On 4 o'clock hour, Reno's in. Adam Hill, Cofield. We're going to talk to a cool story, John Becker, one of the mid-major, really successful coaches. And we did that a little while ago. Adam, really insulting him, So that's something to,
I attacked him.
To stick around for. Our stay in Phoenix, brief, but always adventure-filled with Adam Hill around. So, you crossed a protest line or a picket line this morning?
Well, kind of. I mean, I don't think I would do that. By, you know, by my nature, I think I would support that in most ways. But I think there was a blurred picket line.
Yeah.
I think, to be fair. There was protests going on around several of the team hotels today. I think it was a union that represents a lot of the hotel workers here in Phoenix. So I think all the team hotels had protests outside of them with, you know, marchers and they're chanting and trying to get their message out. And I know you drove by a couple and saw, you know, people supporting, you know, honking and support. And I had pre-ordered a coffee in the coffee place happened to be in the lobby of one of the hotels.
Right.
And as I walked in to get my coffee, they're yelling at me to not, not go to the business.
Come on, this is very damn. He loves his coffee. He loves his frou-frou coffee.
I do, but I also love, you know, I also support unions and the cause and everything else. And they're like, don't stay here, don't check in, stay somewhere else. So, you know, and I was like, well, I'm picking up a coffee. I'm not staying here.
Right.
And they're not really, you know, listening. They don't really care about the details. They're just telling me not to go. And I was like, well, I also already ordered it, so it doesn't really do any good to not pick it up. I already paid for it.
Right.
Like, well, what would be the difference? So I'm not going to where you guys think I'm going. I'm going somewhere different. I don't think that message was communicated properly.
So you're now known around Phoenix as Adam Hill, Union Buster.
Yeah, but I don't think that's accurate. I think that's unfair.
I don't believe it's accurate, but it's not a good impression to put upon people.
I feel like I'm comfortable in my decision. I didn't cross their picket line.
Eat the $10 and you ask them, where's a place that you should go get coffee?
They weren't picketing the coffee place.
It doesn't matter. They crossed the line.
They kind of could be.
No, well,
based on the business. You're
right. That's fair.
You're lucky they didn't really listen to you, because then they may have attacked you. Be like, that place too.
There was an issue. There's entrances on two sides of the hotel. So when I tried to leave, I tried to go out the other side where they were picking, and that they had that, the hotel had that entrance and exit blocked off. I was like, can you open this one so that we don't have to go back through?
Oh, boy.
Like, why don't just open this door?
Well, you've been on one today. We had John Becker on. He's the coach of Vermont. You're telling me all about his story, except you left one thing out. And then when we started the convo, it was like, oh, no tact. How just very, very insulting. We started off the convo with John Becker at Vermont. Vermont's a really good basketball school. They've had a lot of success. They make the tournament just about every year, and that's how we started off the conversation. You know, congrats on building what is, or continuing what has been a really good basketball tradition at Vermont.
Yeah, right. It's been multiple coaches. Tom Brennan started it and was a coach there for 19 years, and last 3 years they three-peated and, you know, beat Syracuse in 2005 tournament with a shot from the parking lot there from TJ Sorrentine. And then Mike Lonergan came in, did a great job keeping the program relevant, went to the tournament in 2010. I was I was the ops guy, third assistant, second assistant for Mike. And then when he got the George Washington job, I was fortunate to get promoted 13 years ago to the head coach at Vermont. And we're really proud of what we've built there. You know, we don't have a lot of the bells and whistles and NIL and all that type of stuff, but we do have a really proud fan base, really proud tradition of success there. And it just keeps rolling on.
Is Vermont a basketball state?
Well, it was a hockey school, right, for a long time. You know, St. Louis went there, and, you know, a million NHL guys went there. And it was a hockey school for a long time. And Brennan tells the stories all the time when he got the job in the mid-'80s for his first 15 years. And people tell me all the time they've been in Vermont a long time, a couple hundred people at the Vermont games. Now, you know, 3,200 sell out every game. And it's the hockey team over the last decade has not been as successful as it's been. So it's kind of turned into a basketball school. But as far as a basketball state, we haven't had a Division I scholarship kid out of high school in at least a decade. You know, we've had a couple walk-ons that have become scholarship guys. I usually take the best player in the state as a walk-on now and give them an opportunity to earn a scholarship. A couple of them have taken advantage of that. But, yeah, Vermont's a small – there's only 600,000 people in the state. There's only 40 high schools in the whole state. So, but it's become a really proud basketball the whole state is behind us. No pro sports teams there. So we're really, you know, the biggest show in town. So it has a high major feel as far as the interest level from the community in the state.
Yeah, that's why I ask, because you see these great crowds and they're so fired up and so into it, but I just have not heard of players coming out of there. So it's kind of strange. How much, you know, Brennan's personality was tremendous. And you're obviously good at kind of selling the program and talking about it too. Like how important is that to not only have a good team, but also to bond with the community and kind of bring people in that way?
Yeah, it's a kind of folksy place. Right, like it's a very proud place. The fan base is very loyal. Most of the people have been coming to the game since Brennan was there, and so we're really proud of what we have there. And so it's important as a leader of the program, you know, that it's authentic. I'm very passionate about Vermont. They took a chance on me. Like, they're the only place that would have hired a guy that was at 38 years old. I moved with a wife and two kids to Vermont to become the ops guy for $7,000 and no benefits, like, and then 5 years later as a head coach of the program, and now have has decent amount of success. So I don't forget that, and it's an amazing ride.
So 8 straight regular season crowns, 3 straight NCAA tournament appearances. Yeah, some success. Don't take this the wrong way. I'm going to ask it obnoxiously on purpose. What the hell happened at Gallaudet?
My record?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hardest job in the country, okay? And I was 28, I think, when I got that job. I had no idea what I was doing. I learned some valuable lessons. Most importantly, you got to be yourself when you become the head coach. And when I was there, I was trying to be like the guy that I followed, and the players saw right through that. But I did. I was proud. I taught myself sign language. It's only 4 years school for exclusively for deaf and hard of hearing. So you have to be deaf and hard of hearing to go there. So it's a Division III school in a really good conference. But it was a combination of, it's a really hard job. Your pool of players is very limited. I sucked as a coach at that point.
Very
feel bad about asking a question?
No, very cool institution, too, because they've had a lot of innovations, like with helmets, with the football.
Oh, yeah, you see the AT&T commercials now.
It's very
They
cool.
invented the huddle at Gallaudet because of, they signed the plays to each other. They invented the huddle so the other team couldn't see what play call they were doing. And when I was there, they'd have a huge bass drum, like in a marching band bass drum, that they would hit, that they put right at the line of scrimmage, and to hike the ball, they would pound the drum, and the vibrations would shoot down the line, and the guys would know to snap the ball. Now that, that AT&T commercial is unbelievable, the technology now where the coach can signal in the play, and the quarterback can see it right on his helmet. All the players, I assume, can see it on their helmet. It's awesome. That technology is really advanced. And it's an unbelievable place.
Yeah.
And what they've done for the deaf and hard of hearing community, ASL and all of the communication tools that they have developed there is just amazing. And it wasn't successful on the court, but I still have a lot of friends from there, and it taught me a lot those years.
Well, weren't you like coaching tennis and working IT and stuff? I mean, how do you not get turned off from coaching at a point like that?
Looking back, and I was like, it was hard to imagine. I was working a full-time job at Georgetown University. Back then they had computer labs, so I was an IT guy, and I go around and fix the printers and the computers in the computer labs on Georgetown. And at 3 o'clock, I drive across D.C., cross town, and then coach at Gallaudet, and get home at 10 o'clock at night. I did that for 5 years. And then it was only a part-time paying job. I think as head coach, I got $3,000, and so had to drive the van. And so then I needed extra money and convinced me to be the tennis coach. I was like, sure, you know, so I didn't know, you know, I just hit them balls and they, and then I drive the van to the match and just put the lineups in, but did that for a couple years. And yeah, then eventually my wife's like, you know, what are you doing? And so I tried to get them to make it a full-time job at Gallaudet, the basketball thing. And they're like, we can't do it. And so I got out of coaching at that point, got my master's at GW and IT, you know, at night while I was working. And then, you know, kind of got the itch and was fortunate to get back in as an assistant at Catholic, which led to the Vermont opportunity, which was still a opportunity. But I guess I always believed I could get to this point, even though the rational person would say you're crazy.
You can be awesome around for story. A little bit. I'm running video, and one of the videos is black and white. So can you break it down? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Coach, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, that's a nightmare. I cut off John Becker there, who talked to us a little earlier in the day. You tell me a story about him coaching. He was really bad at a school. He had lots of jobs, but you didn't tell me it was a school for the deaf and hard of hearing. And then he, like, fired right back at you. He's, you know, he's like, I learned sign language. Like, this is the most charitable martyrdom ever as a coach.
I think he appreciated our deep dive.
Your knowledge was good.
Yeah.
This was not a UC Davis dentistry botch move like me yesterday.
No.
Come on, how about that? Would you like to be like around us as it got real uncomfortable? I'm like, oh my god.
No, that was great. I think Adam really pulled it together there.
Well, he cursed at the end. Clearly was agitated.
He was agitated.
No, he really wasn't. And then I pile on. I'm like, hey, you know what? Fix my computer.
I will guarantee he did a bunch of interviews today. I guarantee nobody else asked him about Gallaudet.
No. I appreciate it. I never heard of the school.
Yeah.
Good education.
Yeah, and I actually knew somebody who played football there. That's how I kind of knew.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was back when he was talking about the drum day, when you had to, they would line up, and the drum would you know, toll at the time, and they would be able to feel the vibration in the signal.
By the way, can we start or go back to where we started the hour?
You did make a really good point, by the way, about, you know what, it's a limited recruiting pool.
That hit me. I'm like, what's the trail there? By the way, what happens when you lose out on a recruit? You're like, what? Do you know what we have to offer? Where are you going instead? What, are you crazy?
They should have their choice of the top deaf athletes, I would imagine.
Back to the beginning of the hour. Damon, earlier off the air, Adam accused me of, what would you call it? You said racism.
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard the protests going on. I'm parking in a garage across from the convention center. We're here in Phoenix for the Final Four. And I hear the drumming, and I'm like, oh, there must be some sort of Native American protest. I know, you know, obviously there's a bunch of Native American tribes in Arizona.
Yeah.
And
you
so,
just hear any drum, you're not, like, that's Native American?
The drum sounded like Native American music.
And how then do you know, like, what Native American music sounds like, Steve?
Yeah,
name me
drums.
A song. Give me a name of a song.
Yeah, it's drums.
What was the movie I talked about that was up for Best Picture?
Killers of the Flower Moon. Name a song.
Exactly. I don't know any songs specifically.
He just hears a drum and he thinks Native
it's
American.
It's not hears a drum. You know I'm a percussionist expert.
I'm sorry,
you know,
Steve.
That. I'm the only fan of percussion on the show.
Come on,
I'm going to strike this. I'm going to strike this from the record. But
we're dumping it.
This is bad,
cutting
Steve.
It out from the archives. That's unfair.
I'm making the.
You're right.
I'm making the stand.
I heard a protest. I heard the noise. I owed it to the protest because I'm big on protest. It's the American way. That I should have walked over and found out what it was. And then now I'm disappointed to find out.
But you just assume.
That it was a. That
assumptions are what leads to racism, Steve.
But that it was a pro-union protest, and I'm very big on unions.
And then you accuse me of crossing a picket line, which I did not.
It's Cofield and Company. On ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Moving on the halfway point of the show here in Phoenix. Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. So Adam Hill and I have been joking as we're talking to all the coaches, the current coaches, about, you know, this week's a little bit different at the convention. Coaches are a little more stressed now. You're, you know, looking at your phone, what's going on at the portal, who's going to leave. So Bruce Weber sits down with us. Former coach at K-State and Illinois and Southern Illinois. And I swear to God, the first thing I thought of, one, is, first of all, hello.
Hello. Okay. Good to see you guys.
The first thing I thought of when you sat down was, man, his hair looks great. It looks fuller. And then I hear you speak, and I'm like,
His voice is back.
I have a voice.
Has anyone said that to you?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Every time we talked to him, it was like super scratchy. I'm like, he's yelling all the time, and his hair doesn't look that great.
Yeah. Well, my hair, I let grow if you don't. That was the whole thing about I made a bet over COVID that somebody said, oh, they're never going to do anything to the teams that got in trouble with the NCAA, with the FBI thing. And I said, they are. I'm on the ethics committee. I've heard it. They've told me they're going to do something. So I let my hair grow. So it went for about a year. And then when I did retire, I announced I'm cutting my hair because it was over. But, you know, and the voice, though, my worst ever was the day after we beat Arizona. And we're going to the Final Four, and I have an ESPN at 8 o'clock in the morning on national TV, and I am moving my lips, and there is just air coming out because I had no voice. I was embarrassed. My wife was embarrassed. My daughters are like, how can you do that? I don't have a voice. I'm sorry. But, you know, I don't yell as much. I enjoy myself. I enjoy being on BTN, a Big Ten Network, and but it's definitely a little less stressful than coaching basketball.
It reminds me, we were talking to Lon Kruger a bit ago, and I asked him if he would enjoy coaching now, like with all the changes that are happening, everything going on. He said, not as much. Yeah. Is what he said. Are you kind of in agreement?
And I, you know, I go way back with Lon. Obviously, he was a K-Stater. I've known him forever. You know, such a great guy. Huge with Coaches versus Cancer and all this stuff, and obviously Vegas. But, you know, I think we love coaching. We were in it a long time. We were in it because of the young men and creating basketball families and seeing them develop and all that. But it's changed. There's no doubt about it. In the last 2 years, it's astronomical changes. And, you know, I joked on, I was just doing another show. I said, you know, I used to call them student athletes, but I don't know if I can call them student athletes anymore.
Paid employees in a couple of years, probably.
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame because I'm about the kids. And that's why I got into it 45 years ago. I've been part of a lot of guys becoming successful because of basketball and having college degrees and being family guys. The Purdue guys, I was there for 18 years with Coach Katie, and a lot of them are here, and I've talked to them, and they were successful because they went through 4 years at Purdue. They have Purdue family backing them, Coach Katie, Matt Painter now, and so you're not going to have that. And I know guys are making a little money now, but are they going to save it? And is it going to help them in life? So that's the one thing I worry about with all this NIL and the portal and all that.
And it affects every level of coach. So if you're at Illinois, then you're fighting like hell because you got to be old and stay old. Yes. Southern Illinois, we watched them last year. They played in a tournament in where was that? In Southern California. UNLV was there. They played them. And I'm like, Lance Jones was on that team, right?
Yes, with Damask. Lance and Damask.
So I was like, oh, man, Damask is odd. They got great building blocks here.
Yes.
And then, you know, Damask pops up at Illinois, and Lance, I think, is a really key player for Purdue, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. Lance has done a great job. Matt Painter has stayed the course. He stayed with his plan. He's got eight Indiana kids in there. Obviously, Zach makes a difference and helps those eight Indiana kids to be pretty good. But he needed to add one guy, and he needed a defender, some quickness, and he added Lance Jones, and it's been a really, really positive thing for Purdue basketball.
Why can Purdue win? I think a lot of people this week are like, well, this is Connecticut. We're just going to watch them win two games. Why can Purdue win this?
Well, I think anyone can win, to be honest. But with Purdue, and I've watched them all year, and I'm close to them, and, they are really smart, and they are here to win this thing, and they play together so well, and they know down the stretch they knew Zach had to have the ball against Tennessee, and he scored 14 in a row. You know, it's one thing to sit in the huddle and tell guys that, and then they know and go out and execute that and get him the ball, and then he makes all the plays down the stretch. So, and, you know, they're older than a year ago. They went through it. I was at Media Day, Big Ten Media Day, and we had the Purdue players up on the podium, and they said, this is about winning a national championship, and they've stayed focused the whole year, and that's what they've come to do. Now, UConn, they are good. and not only do they have talent, and they might not be as talented as last year, to be honest, but they play together, they play the right well, they're well coached, and they run good stuff. and they get movement, they handoffs, all that stuff. And so it's going to be fun. I would love to see the UConn-Purdue game in the national championship. You know, those are two teams with Houston probably that have been the three best teams all year.
One of the things Brad Underwood told us is when you play them, when you play Connecticut, you're just so terrified that you're going to have two bad possessions in a row and then you're buried. And it, how do you kind of protect against that as a coach?
Well, I've never seen a 30-0 run. I asked Andy Katz today. He's on BTN with us. And I said, Andy, you've been in this long. Have you ever? I had never seen that.
No.
But they just are so efficient, and they get stops that led to transition, easy layups. Then if they don't have it in the half court, they're running their stuff and they're executing it and getting it inside. And then they get guys that can shoot the basketball. So it's tough. I mean, it is tough against them. Obviously, Coach Underwood, he's probably hasn't slept many nights since last week, that trying to figure that out. But sometimes you get beat like that, it's like it's better than lose by one, because then it's killing you. Did you make the right move or sub or whatever? But he still, I'm sure, would have liked to have a close game and had a chance instead of getting having that 30-0 run.
Bruce Weber is now a media personality. He's on the Big Ten Network. You know, longtime coach and obviously connected to the Cougars very closely. Coaches versus cancer. We've been talking about it a bunch this week, and obviously the big golf tournament's coming up in Vegas, the 15th through the 19th of May. You can get information at coaches.cancer.org. Just talk about your involvement. Everyone's got a different story of why they're involved.
Yeah. You know, one, what Lon does, and that you think about Lon, he leaves Vegas, still has a tournament, and the thing grows. I always thought, you know, once he left, well, no one's going to support it. It's grown. It's so big. It's huge. People come from all over the country. They treat you well. It's great. And I really appreciate what Lon and Breyer have done for Coach vs. Cancer. For me, once I became a head coach, I always said I'm going to make a commitment to help and use my profile, use my podium that I have. And I did. I got involved in it. You know, it goes back to my grandma. I was a little kid. We didn't know what cancer was. This is in the 60s. And all of a sudden, we can't go in the hospital. We're waving to her in the window. And then she's gone. And my uncle dies. And then teammates have died. Assistant coaches of mine have died. So, you know, I just think it's so important. And what the coaches, this is one thing. We do some dumb things as coaches and we compete and all this stuff, but this is one thing. We come together and we've raised over $150 million. Norm Stewart started it. Norm, Coach Boeheim was really involved early, but it's just a good thing. And, this is one time I say I'm proud to be a coach because of the involvement in Coaches versus Cancer and what we've done.
How much pride does it bring you, just as you said, like among coaches, to see how many other coaches have just really embraced it, and not just lip service? It's easy to say, hey, yeah, we're involved in this, or go support this, but you guys are so involved in this.
Yeah, and it's not only the coaches, but it's a lot of times their wives are very involved. And when you're putting on galas and things like that, it takes a lot. Like Lon thing, we're playing Lon in a game, and I'm at K-State, he's at Oklahoma, and he calls me, he goes, Bruce, how many of you think you can get in the foursomes? I'm coming to kick your butt today. I'll talk to you about the foursomes after. But that's how committed he was, because he, you know, and K-State, because of Lon, you know, his connection there, you know, a lot of times we had the most people there participating. But it is something that the coaches put a lot of time in. They care about it, and in a way they're competitive about it, because they want to have their gala to be the biggest and raise the most money. And so it's again, this competitive nature, it's a good thing because it's saving lives.
So we mentioned, you mentioned your longtime relationship with Purdue as an assistant, and then you had three head coaching jobs. I guess I probably shouldn't ask this, but like when you moved on to any of the places, you're like, man, maybe I should have stayed at this place or that place. And the reason I ask this, and you know, we don't have to get into another guy's business, but Arkansas is looking for a coach as we're on the air here. It looks like Chris Beard is not going to leave Ole Miss. So now Jerome Tang from Kansas State is a top target. And I just wonder what K-State people would say to Jerome to kind of keep him around.
Yeah, I'm sure that will not be fit in very well with them, and they won't be feeling too good about it. And, you know, because you want your coach to stay, and that's what it's about. It's a tough business. I wish I would have been at one program the whole time. I would have stayed at Purdue, to be honest. I was there 18 years. I was going to become the head coach if I stayed. you know, we got a new president, new AD. They said, you got to go leave and prove yourself. I knew Coach Katie.
Oh, wow.
I knew Coach Katie was going to retire sooner or later. So I Southern Illinois popped up. Jim Hart was the AD. He took me on. Purdue called back every year and said, come back. And I said, I am not coming back until Coach is ready to retire. And then, you know, Matt was my assistant at Southern. And then, you know, former player there, Purdue called. And I said, hey, I'm at Illinois now. There's no way I can do this. And, you know, and they said, who? And I said, Matt. Matt should be the guy. I knew Coach would be happy about it. I was worried about his age at that time. But obviously he's done pretty well. And, you know, won championships, got him in the Final Four, which is really, really special and great. It's great for Coach and how he's included Coach Katie in the mix. But I am so blessed to have been part of college basketball as long as I did, in the places I have been at, been to the national championship, I don't know what it is, 13, 14 conference championships, all that stuff, and just USA basketball, you know, coaching that was just a thrill. We won the gold medal in the 19 and unders. It was just amazing. So it's just special, but it's not a fun business all the time.
No.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and glad you're doing well.
I appreciate it, and everyone says you're media. No, I'm still a coach.
But I always like to bust the chops on that front. We'll see you in Vegas for the golf.
Very good. Thank you.
We're going to check to TI Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Just a few with Salerno on the scene.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Golden Circle here on a Friday, our home away from home every Friday. And Craig Salerno's man on the set there at Treasure Island, and Cofield and Adam Hill are hanging out here, Radio Row, Final Four in Phoenix. Greg, my friend, how are you?
Good, man. Just had one of the best chicken salad sandwiches I've ever had, by the way.
Really?
Yes. So if you ever come here to the Golden Circle, I highly recommend it.
Chicken salad is always a very risky move.
It definitely is. Definitely
but
is.
But I will tell you, Jed, our remote tech boss and soon to be moving up the ladder, he's a very stoic guy. I don't know how much you've worked around Jed.
Yes.
I almost fear him a little bit.
Yes, he definitely has a half-eaten mailman somewhere in his house.
I was going to be positive about
it. Oh, okay, sorry.
No, because that guy, and by the way, I think it's his birthday.
I love Jed, by the way.
No, the guy we're talking about with the half-eaten whatever is the very intimidating but diminutive Bobby Machado.
Oh, yes. I see.
Jed's like a military guy. Like the discipline, he kind of looks at you like you are just a slug. Look at you, you fat radio guy. But he
sold
me
on really
good chicken.
Shape somehow, too. He says he never goes out or does anything.
I don't think he does, but this is good news for you. He is an endorser of the chicken salad. As soon as I saw him eating it, now you follow it up,
gotcha.
I think I'm in.
Yeah.
Chicken salad's weird to me because my mom made it much different than everyone else does. Like, basically just catered to me. It was just chicken and black olives, my two favorite things. And then I realized, like, that's not how most chicken salad is.
So, the
first time I ordered out, I was like, wait, what is this?
So, wait, you always had black olives in your chicken salad?
I have black olives in almost everything I eat. Yes. Essentially, I just add black olives to everything.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Nice. Salerno down at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. All right, we've been hitting on different topics of the day and stuff's coming down fast and furiously, but I didn't get your call or your take on Stephon Diggs being moved from the Bills to the Texans. And then we find out last night, and I'm not sure which side prompted this, but I think it was what Diggs wanted, right, Adam?
Yeah.
That the deal, he had more years on his contract. He's, what is he, 30 or 31? He's now on a one-year contract with the Texans, I guess in hopes of having a monster year and getting a bigger contract. It's a pretty risky move for him.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, too, because, I mean, he's not a young guy. I mean, you get injured or something, you kind of screwed yourself. I don't know. I mean, I guess if he goes out and balls, though, and he sees the offense they have down there and Stroud, obviously, I mean, maybe he thinks it's a sure thing, but it is definitely risky.
Also, I think you missed the most important part of the story, Steve, that he paid $100,000 to switch his number to number one.
Yeah.
That's important. He clearly wanted number one. He couldn't get it with the Bills, and he's like, I have to go somewhere else and get the number and pay $100,000 to do it.
So the angle with Diggs for us is because Adam's a big Buffalo Bills.
Who saw this coming?
Hater. We'll explain it to Greg and explain it to the audience in our last couple minutes.
Stephon Diggs can't stand Josh Allen, and it's been a running theme for a long time. And Stephon Diggs called out Josh Allen for a miserable playoff performance on the field last year, not this past season. One season before this. And he confronted him on the sideline, and they downplayed it in the offseason, but it was very clear. Who do you think leaked to Jason Whitlock last year?
What was the leak?
A big surprise when Jason Whitlock went on, and he's like, my people around the team tell me Josh Allen doesn't watch film, doesn't study, has no idea what he's doing out there. He's just playing off natural talent and doesn't actually pay attention and know the game.
Oh.
And that was what Jason Whitlock said. And I have almost no doubt in my mind that that's where it came from. Like, this has been a running conflict. There's no question. And now he gets out of there. The night before the trade, when somebody on Twitter was saying, I don't think Stephon Diggs is the only reason Josh Allen's been successful, and he tweeted out, "You sure about that?"
Oh, okay. So
and
he's
that
been
may have
publicly
been the last
vocal.
Straw, but yeah, he said it.
What do you think, Greg? In our final 40 seconds here, has the window closed for the Bills? Or are they going to be fine?
Well, I mean, it's a deep wide receiver draft, so I kind of get why they didn't, really care that much about it, but. You can't expect a guy to come in and be Diggs right away. I mean, I don't know, man. And his turnover issues and all that kind of stuff, it's not going to help with this. So,
well, we're going to find out, man. I keep saying when you pay a quarterback $50, $55 million, guess what? You don't get a $28 million receiver. You got to make receivers good and get them to excel. So, all right, Greg, we'll check in with you in just a little bit.
All right, guys, thanks.
Greg Salerno down at TI, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. More on the way here, live Final Four, Phoenix. Next hour, a little more recap of the Kruger interview, Kevin Kruger, and more rumors on DJ Thomas.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Oh, Devon, we got a lot to talk about, but we're going to do it after we talk to Bryce Drew about Phoenix. You were here, so I want to hear your recollection of the Super Bowl experience here in Phoenix. Man, no one really all the last 2 days has embraced us like one Bryce Drew, and he's the coach at Grand Canyon. Bryce, of course, an NCAA hero, playing for Valpo in the past, was coach at Vanderbilt. Man, he was thrilled to be sitting down with us and welcomed us to Phoenix.
Hey, everybody coming to town, basketball world all here, so welcome to Phoenix. We love Vegas, so we've had some great times there with our conference tournament last few years. But nothing like being home. So thank you guys for having me on, and excited to talk some hoops.
Do I put Bryce on the spot about I always hear Pizzeria Bianco is the place to go, but the main joint you can't get in. And then I was told there's another one in the Burbs. Is there an alternate pizza place that you like that I could go to?
You know what?
Like a backer of Grand Canyon?
Sponsor. Yeah. I'm from Chicago, and so we do have Malnati's Pizza down here.
Yeah.
So I love Malnati's. So
what kind of pizza?
But
the
pizza,
cake or the thin crust?
I do both. Mostly
oh, really?
mostly thin.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will do the thick. When I was younger, it was thick, but now I'm more thin.
But it's hard, man. It's hard.
It's hard. But Pizzeria Blanco, Jerry Colangelo, who's obviously a legend here. He is Italian, so he knows really good pizza. That's his spot.
No, it's awesome. I watch all the TV food shows. I mean, Nurse claims that he's the best pizza guy in the world, and certainly in the United States, and so. It's pretty crazy level pizza. So I got to start by mentioning you have a lot going on at Grand Canyon, but I don't know how you've kind of fostered and developed this student crowd following. You guys are insane. UNLV and I work on the broadcast crew was in town before you guys played over at the arena. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's and you're in your hometown. But then when I look up in the NCAAs and I'm like, it's Spokane. Like, what'd you guys charter 5 jumbo jets to get them up there?
Yeah,
that's a long trip.
Yeah. We had quite a few rowdy havocs up there, which was awesome. And then you take into account that that Spokane pretty much hates St. Mary's. So you had literally every single person from Spokane at the game cheering for GCU over St. Mary's. So when St. Mary's saw that bracket, they said, "Probably send us anywhere, just don't send us to Spokane." It was pretty crazy. You know, we did a practice at an elementary school just to give you guys details of how intense this rivalry is, and we had elementary kids, and we were walking into our walkthrough, we're like, "Beat St. Mary's." It's like third and fourth graders. They're like, this is nuts. So that rivalry is really intense.
I mean, going back to the just more specifically the fan base, I guess how has this developed? How has this become a thing? Because it's this school that just kind of sprouts out people are like, what is this? And there's this loyal following of people travel to Vegas, travel to Spokane. Yeah. It's wild.
So it's happened for a long time. You know, we have no football. And so the big events on campus are around basketball. So homecomings, basketball games, you know, alumni coming back, basketball games. So everything's on that. We have in the fall, it's really cool. We publicize it, and you can join the Havocs. And they open it like at a certain time of day. They say, hey, at 6:30 on this day, you can join. And I want to say we were sold out in 30 minutes. Over 2,500 students paid whatever it was, $70, whatever. They get a T-shirt, and they get their place in the Havocs. And, yeah, 30 minutes sold out. And so it's really cool. It's more of a culture that's been going on for years and years and years. And when you have almost 30,000 students on campus, again, that does help because, you know, you don't have to get your whole student body to be in the Havocs. You just need a portion.
And how – I mean, I have to imagine guys that are coming in that you're recruiting, you can even sell the, hey, there's going to be a loyal fan base here. And a lot of schools, it's tough to get people in, to draw them in. You guys have that built in here.
It is, and it definitely helps in recruiting. It helps with our team. You know, how fun is it to play in front of a sold-out crowd every night that's, you know, that's rowdy. And our players just totally enjoy the experience. It is funny. Some of our players will admit later on, like you know, I was a little bit overwhelmed playing in front of them for the first couple times. And so if you aren't used to it, it is a little bit overwhelming even for our current players.
It's wild to watch. And it was wild to watch that game. I know the stat sheet doesn't say this. I feel like watching it, there were 75 block shots. It was wild what went on in that game. What were you guys able to do defensively? And just how much of that is just players just wanting it to go out and block that many shots and alter so many others too?
Yeah, you know, we were extremely active. And, you know, it was just a high-level game, you know, back and forth. I think once you get, again, to that point of the year, it's so intense and every possession is so valuable. And I just love the intensity and the heart, you know, that our guys play with. I got so many texts saying how, you know, the games were – the teams played so hard, and it was just so fun. You could feel how physical the game was. It was just really neat to hear from others.
Bryce Drew is on Cofield and Company, coach at Grand Canyon. So we're going to have a lot of discussion here about the big boy teams with the big guys, right? The favorites in this with Purdue and UConn. But you played Alabama, and I feel like Alabama coming into this is a bit under-respected, under-publicized. Tell us what you saw, because they – certainly they can score because they did all year long. Yeah. They can be dangerous.
Yeah, I know they're extremely dangerous. I think one thing that changed is they really started playing defense at the end of the year. They didn't play as well defensively early in the year. But now when you add how good they are offensively with the team that's locked in on defense with the length that they have, you know, it's scary. And, I mean, UConn's obviously been the most dominant team. But if they try to run with Alabama for 40 minutes boy, Alabama, they get hot. There's no safe lead. UConn could be up 10 with 5 minutes left, and they could be down 2 with, you know, 2 minutes left for how fast, you know, Alabama can score.
It's interesting you said they started focusing on defense, which absolutely did happen. NC State is the other one who their metrics are awful defensively. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the last 9 games, totally different. So can teams just change? Like, as a coach, can a team just figure it out? Can it change? What leads to that?
Yeah, you know, some as you get so many new players, sometimes it just takes time to soak in. Sometimes, you know, when you do get to March, you know, it brings out the best in players. It brings out the full focus in players. And again, like Alabama had, what, 9 new players this year? So sometimes it just takes a while for guys to really bond and unite and understand and really work together at a high level. And, you know, Alabama did it at the perfect time.
What have you thought? We asked a couple other coaches that come to Vegas for tournaments. This, what have you thought of Vegas becoming the home of college basketball for a week in March? You guys are a big part of it. Your fans are certainly a big part of that. What have you thought of Vegas as a host?
Yeah, you know, it's great because there's so many different tournaments there. There's so much going on, and you know, I think the fan base is really good. I mean, the sports fan base in Vegas, you guys are there. I think it's just growing and growing and bringing the pro teams there. I'd imagine there's going to be an NBA team there soon, which is only going to increase, you know, the sports involvement in Vegas. But there's really no city like it that would host that many tournaments and have that much basketball going on in 1 week. And so besides the Final Four, it's probably the next most that weekend is the next most event that the basketball world comes to Vegas.
Yeah, we've been talking about, well, yesterday came out, Fox wants to put together almost another NIT with 16 invitees, and it's going to be Big 12, Big 10, and Big East heavy. And I've been countering with, I actually think we should host the Sweet 16 for the women.
Yeah. No, no.
We have enough arenas. We could do it. And then it's a unique place. A lot of there's a lot of women's programs so good. They know they're going to go to the Sweet 16. Could book months out.
I totally agree. And as you see, I mean, the women's game is getting so much viewing on TV right now. Really some fun players, some fun teams to watch. And, again, the marketing in Vegas, everyone wants to visit Vegas. I can't imagine events not doing well that go there.
We started with pizza. We can close with food, too. Would you go pizza or Portillo's if you had to choose?
Man, I like your style, man.
That's what the show is.
I like the places you're bringing up right now. The Portillo's chocolate cake, you can't go wrong with. I would try to hit the pizza first and then hit the cake at the end of Portillo's. Right. Would be my choice.
That's good. That's good advice.
Bryce Drew, Grand Canyon, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Man, he was good. Just in a good mood.
I feel like he liked us.
Or he just fakes it with everyone. I don't know.
That's possible.
All right, the pizza conversation. I so wanted to get pizza, and truth be told, we talked to Bryce Drew late yesterday, so I was all ready to go out because I talk about pizza, in Phoenix all the time. I'm ready to go, and then last night went off the rails a bit. Yeah. There was a lot of discomfort because we didn't get pizza, and I wasn't even counting on Adam Hill to go out with me, because I know you got some networking to do, and then I found out you had friends in town.
Yeah, I got.
Well, apparently, I had hung around one of the friends, but I'm so old, and he looked older. I didn't remember him, so set this up.
We all got derailed. I mean, I just want to hang out. I don't want to go eat dinner or like go anywhere. I just want to hang out in the lobby. That's my plan always.
She had college friends in town.
Yeah, I was walking around the streets 2 days ago here in Phoenix and bumped into an old college friend who now works kind of with another basketball program, and he just happened to be here in town. We ran into each other on the streets. Don't really hang out much, just kind of ran into an old college friend, and he said, hey, our other college friend lives in town. We should all meet up tomorrow. And I was like, all right, I guess. It's one of those things I didn't imagine would actually happen. I thought they'd go, whatever, because I haven't really seen the other guy since college, basically.
Yep.
And then it turns out they came over to the hotel. We all met in the lobby. You were there. Arash was
there. By the way, Damon, both massive success stories out of UNLV.
Sure.
Do you feel good about that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think they entered UNLV successful.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Successful families.
Okay. Well, they built on it.
Sure. And
because one of your friends said money and wanted to treat us.
Yeah.
Which I'm never comfortable with. And you still haven't sent me his phone number.
I haven't.
We went to dinner. His friend decides to treat, and at dinner, I'm like, I actually pick up my phone. I go, look at your phone.
I saw it.
And I'm like, get me his number. I will sniff out his Venmo, and I'm sending him money.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. We went, and he said he's paying for the whole dinner. Everybody get what they want. Everybody ordered basically the cheapest thing on the menu.
Oh.
And no drinks.
I didn't. I mean, I didn't go crazy.
No, you were like the third or fourth cheapest.
Yeah,
thing.
I was like, a burger was the cheapest, and it was
an expensive restaurant.
It was a $25 burger. They had a pork chop. I'm like, I'm going to get that. I'll get a side. And then, I don't know, we couldn't see him ordering.
I think he got upset that everybody was getting they were trying to be
he could see it?
Frugal. And he was really? Like, nope, we're not doing this. And then he basically ordered like two of every appetizer on the menu. And then me and him had been talking about one of the entrees, like, oh, this looks pretty good. And then he just ordered an extra one of those. It was way too much of an order. It was
seven
ridiculous.
Seven apps, multiple sides. Everyone got an entree. But here's the great thing. As we speak to Damon about this, Damon is the voice of reason we need on the show, because you and I are often guilt-ridden. I will never ask for favors, very rarely. And Damon, we know Damon's life a lot about it now. You got no problem doing it. He enjoys it. He's like, yeah, why not? I don't feel any shame.
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. I would have ordered the best steak, maybe not the most expensive.
No, they're like a grass-fed Kobe steak.
Oh, they did. I didn't see that one.
Because
I think someone got a $59, maybe $62 steak.
Because there's nice. Levels to this. Is he someone that he's just trying to impress, or when he says he's got it, he will not think about this meal ever?
I think it's a combination. I don't think it's gonna like. He's not gonna like see the statement and be like, what was that? I think he'll be like, okay, yeah, to pay it.
Okay, yeah.
He was doing business, as he said. I'll write it off.
Yeah, he said, you guys are media. I'll write this off.
Oh my God! Oh, yeah. Give me his number.
A write off does not mean it's free though. Yeah. Like you still have to pay for it. You just don't have to pay tax on the money. Like it's not free.
Well, it goes back to our story of the only radio show for that Super Bowl in Detroit who went and did shows at strip clubs in Canada. That was us, and the Sports Pig at that Cheetah place.
Yeah, and he just kept wanting money from you, and he's like, write it off.
Well, he wanted to order shots for the strippers.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's a write-off.
What do you mean? Doesn't write-off mean it's free?
No. That's not how it works.
You get a little tax break. You get a little tax break on it.
I was getting all excited about this tax season. I'm just prepared to write everything off.
You're gonna have a big wake-up call because DJT, the other one, changed things for our likes. Yeah. Write-offs aren't as easy as they used to be.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get all of my phone bills back for this year.
Ooh.
Hey, I'm writing them off. This is business, right?
It's different than a write-off.
I don't know about taxes, guys. We can talk more during the break.
All right, coming up, we break down more of the Final Four, and especially the Dan Hurley and UConn side of things with PJ Carlissimo.